Today begins the so-called lame duck session of the Congress. The members of the current Congress, both the ones that have been reelected, those that weren't up for election, and those that haven't been reelected. But at any rate, we'll be in session, and we're hoping that I think on Wednesday we will have a vote on three different items that the majority leader has set a vote on. One relates to electric vehicles and additional authority for the Department of Energy to encourage electric vehicle use in the country. Another one relates to the, I'm trying to remember them all, I think the third one relates to food safety, and food safety is, of course, the one that we think we have the votes to actually proceed to. These are cloture votes to actually get over the procedural hurdle of getting to proceed to the bills. So we will then be on the legislation to improve food safety oversight for the remainder of this week, and try to get a vote on that before the week's over. If not, we will then do that right the week after Thanksgiving. We will be coming back into session. Congress is not scheduled to be in session next week, which is Thanksgiving week, but we'll be in session again the week after Thanksgiving, and then we'll stay in session as long as we think we can do useful work here. So I don't know how long that will be. It'll be up to the majority leader to determine that based on the level of cooperation he can get. But that's what's on the schedule. So let me just open it up to questions. Why don't we start with you, Bill? Bill Dupuy. Oh,
okay, thanks. Could you give us some more background on the electric vehicles vote and on the DOE commitment to encourage use of electric vehicles?
Well, this is a bill that that has a couple of different parts to it. One is to encourage more use of electric vehicles. Another is to encourage more use of natural gas, particularly in the transportation sector for buses and fleet vehicles of various kinds. And the legislation was reported out of our Energy Committee pretty unanimously. It provides that the federal government will assist communities that want to put in recharging stations. It will encourage model communities be chosen around the country to try to encourage more use of electric vehicles in those communities as a way to get the country more focused on shifting over to use of electric vehicles. And all of that is being done because, of course, we finally are to a point where we have electric vehicles coming on the market. I believe the Nissan Leaf will be sold starting this next month. The Chevy Volt will be sold shortly after that. It's not a pure electric vehicle, but it does have a substantial amount of electric power on board. So, at any rate, there is the opportunity, and we want to do all we can to accelerate the effort to move toward more use of electric vehicles.
In terms of electric buses, are there any buses coming on the market or on the market?
I don't know of any electric buses that are scheduled to come on the market. I do think that most of the focus in bus transportation has been transitioning as many buses as we can to use of natural gas, because the natural gas, of course, is more abundant in this country. It requires less imports of foreign oil, and it has fewer emissions. So we have a lot of our bus fleets that are already operating off of natural gas, and this legislation would try to encourage more communities to take that course.
Is there a money bill attached to these provisions?
There's not a money bill attached to these themselves. They're separate from these bills. We obviously have to pass an appropriations bill to get us through the next fiscal year. It's still unclear as to whether the majority leader will try to go ahead with an so-called omnibus appropriation bill, which would have detailed appropriations for all of the different agencies of the federal government, or whether instead we would do what's called another continuing resolution, that is, maintain current funding levels for all the government agencies and leave it to the next Congress after they convene in January to decide on the on more detailed appropriations.
Okay, thanks.
Mike, are you there? Mike Jackson.
Yes, Senator, right here. I was wondering if you could kind of give us the lay of the land in Washington now, since the midterm elections have settled down.
Well, I think it's still unclear what the lay of the land is. As I say, we're trying to first determine what more can be done by this Congress, the current Congress, before it adjourns. And clearly there are important things that need to be done, both in the appropriating of funds to keep the government functioning, but also in extending tax provisions. There's a lot of focus, of course, on the so-called Bush tax cuts, which were adopted during the first term of President Bush's administration, and those will all expire at the end of this year. So we need to take action. I hope we're able to take action in the next few weeks to extend those, as to at least as they apply to so-called middle-class taxpayers, that is, families with income of $250,000 or less. So that's the top priority. The estate tax clearly needs to be reinstituted, and I hope that that's part of a package that we do as well. And there are many provisions related to energy production and use that some have expired at the end of 2009 and have not been renewed. Others are scheduled to expire at the end of 2010. Those also need to be renewed. So I hope we're able to do that package of tax provisions before we conclude this Congress.
Speaking of the taxes, there are some that are saying right now that if you raise taxes on those that are making $250,000 or more, that it's going to hamper any economic recovery. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, most economists that I've heard from say that that's not the case, that clearly keeping taxes where they have been for the vast majority of Americans makes good sense in this economic downturn. And that's what would be the case if we were to keep in place the tax provisions for everyone with up to $250,000 of income. That's 98% of the population. The remaining 2% will, of course, get the same lower taxes for the first $250,000 of income that they receive, but they would then pay a higher percentage on income above that $250,000. And most economists think that that would not be a substantial drag on the economy.
I know you've seen your share of lame duck sessions over the years. Can you kind of take us through what they're like?
Well, I think that it's always difficult to get things done in a lame duck session because you have a lot of newly elected members, and they of course would just as soon see things put off until they get sworn into office in the first week of January, so that they can express their views on these issues and vote accordingly. So it's difficult to get things done in a lame duck session. This year, we have had great difficulty, of course, this Congress, we've had great difficulty getting over the procedural obstacles that Republicans have established here in the Senate in the nature of filibusters on many items. And since that's been the case, there are an awful lot of items still remaining unattended to, like these tax provisions, for example. And I hope we can get those done in this lame duck session, but there's no assurance that we can.
All right, that's all I have for now.
All right. Bill, you have something else?
Now that you're back, what are you hearing? Will there be a move by the majority leader to change the filibuster rules and other rules of the Senate when the new Congress convenes?
Frankly, I haven't heard any discussion of that yet. We are going to have a meeting of our Democratic members of the Senate tomorrow, and we will perhaps have a chance to discuss that and whether or not that's something we want to take on when the new Congress convenes in January. But I haven't heard any discussion yet.
On the Medicare front, we're hearing that doctors and other health care providers are bracing for further cuts in payments unless Congress does something. This is an issue, I understand, that dates back to unfinished business on Medicare reimbursement in the 1990s. Is that true? And do you see any relief coming for the medical community?
Well, yeah, answering the last question first, I do think we will go ahead and pass provisions to ensure that there are not cuts in Medicare reimbursement for doctors and other health care providers. That's something which Congress has had to do repeatedly. You're right that this all stems from provisions that were put in law in the 1990s, which essentially assumed that there would be reductions in health care costs in the future that were unrealistic and that never, in fact, materialized. And so Congress has had to come along repeatedly and essentially waive those provisions and go ahead and maintain current reimbursement levels. We will do that again. We'll have to do that again in the next couple of weeks, and I hope we're able to get cooperation to do it.
But none of that had anything to do with the Obama health care plan.
No, this is all part, frankly, this is a fallout or a follow-on that stems from the Balanced Budget Act of 1997, which assumed spending levels in the future for Medicare that were unrealistically low. And therefore, that's how that act was put together, and there was legislation enacted there which causes the Congress to have to revisit this issue. Frankly, what we ought to do is to go back and repeal that set of provisions so that we don't have to deal with this each year. We've tried to do that. I voted to do that earlier this year, but we weren't able to.
Do you recall who made those assumptions? I mean, that was a fantastically wild, off-the-mark set of assumptions.
Well, it was, but it was what was put into a bill that contemplated balanced budgets as far as the eye could see. And the way they concluded that they could achieve balanced budgets as far as the eye can see is to assume much lower growth rates for the cost of health care than were realistic. So we've had to come back and backfill on that with changes in the law every few years or every few months it's come to be, because Congress has not been willing to go back and just repeal those provisions, which is what we ought to do.
Okay, good. That's it. Well, I'll pass for the moment.
Okay, let me see if Mike has any other questions.
Yeah, Senator, I was wondering if you could go back. I know at the top of the interview here you mentioned something about a food safety bill that you all were hoping to vote on this week. Could you explain a little bit more about that?
Well, the general thrust of the bill is to modernize and give the Food and Drug Administration additional authority and resources to better monitor food that's coming into the our grocery stores and restaurants, and improve food safety across the board. There are a lot of folks, obviously, each year who wind up being sick and in some cases dying because of pathogens in food. And I think most people believe that it is long past time when we improved our food safety monitoring and requirements generally, and that's what this bill tries to accomplish.
All right, that's all I have.
Okay. Bill, do you have anything else?
No, that's all I have, too. Many thanks.
Okay, thank you both for talking with me.
Thank you, Senator.
Bye-bye.